This week on Writers, Inc.
If you love something and it's in you and you've got to get it on paper, but you don't think it's trendy, if you love it, you should still do it because you never know when a trend is going to change. And then also, if you're really determined that you're writing for a living, you know, for an income, you have to look at what they're, you know, take a look at what everybody's buying at the moment.
J.K. Rowling was nearly homeless when she wrote the first Harry Potter book. Stephen King penned Carrie in a small desk wedged between a washer and dryer. James Patterson worked in advertising and famously crafted the Toys R Us theme song long before becoming an author. Join New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker and a panel of industry powerhouses as they pull back the curtain on some of the world's most prolific authors. Where did they start? What is their process? The biggest names in publishing all have origin stories, all have tips and secrets. What does it take to consistently top the bestseller lists and become a household name? Get your notepad out. School's in session. This is Writers, Inc.
Hi, it's Christine Daigle.
I'm Jenna Brown.
This is Kevin Tomlinson.
And I'm J.D. Barker. Welcome to Writers, Inc. All four of us finally here at the same time again.
Yay!
Yeah. Back in action.
Miracle.
It's been a crazy week. We did the book launch party. My sister came to visit, which, you know, she's been here a few times, but her kids are growing up. And this is probably the first time in a while she's been able to visit with her daughter. So I wanted to spend some time with them. And like last Thursday, I fully intended to do the podcast. And they're like, we're going to the museum in Boston. And like my daughter's like, you're going with us, right? And like, how do you say no to a 7-year-old? Way easier to say no
Not
to
easily.
You guys than it is to say no to her.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The trick is to say it loudly. That's what I learned.
Yeah.
When I was 7, that's what I learned from my dad.
Oh,
they took me to the Museum of Fine Art, and I got there and realized I don't like museums of fine art. I was like, well, that's Jackson Pollock. You know, like I recognize some. You know,
yeah.
Like and they had this huge like Van Gogh exhibit, and like the one thought going through my head is like, you know, like he's obviously talented. But like, what caused him to be the guy? You know what I mean? Because there's, you know, when Van Gogh was operating, there must have been 1,000 other painters out there all probably doing something very similar. You know, like what caused that one particular guy to jump out? And, you know, it's honestly, it's a very similar problem, you know, to what we have
as
authors, you know.
With the hard-hitting questions here today.
Who is your patron? Who is your tastemaker? Who is making money off of you? These are all the questions that we ask.
I watched a video the other day that was it's kind of like a mindset video, and it featured four people, two writers, Van Gogh, and a scientist, really the guy who came up with the whole Pangea theory. But Jane Austen was one of the writers, and so was Kafka, and so all of them had something in common, which was they put all this energy into their creative work in their lives and got no recognition, no success.
Yeah.
And didn't succeed until after they died. And all of them had someone that they were close to that sort of championed their work after they died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the way that it went for a long, I mean, not always. You had some people who had success while they were alive, but yeah, I don't know. What is it that gives them that it factor?
You know, if you think about it, like even Elvis Presley, like he was more or less in debt when he died. I think he was worth around $400,000, you know, on
that
paper.
That story is so sad.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, though, like if, you know, Priscilla, his wife, hadn't have stepped up and done what she did, like he would have probably either been forgotten or, you know, taken advantage of in some way. Like his image would have been, you know, like grabbed by a gazillion different companies and utilized. And you know, now he's cemented, you know, like he's going to be 100 years from now, people are going to still talk about Elvis just like they do James Dean.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just got me thinking, like, how did, you know, this particular person stand out? And funny, I was standing in front of the Jackson Pollock picture with my daughter, and she's looking up at it, and she's like, but he just spilled his paint, Dada. I don't understand. That kind of summed it all up, I think, for me.
Yeah.
Your daughter is looking at a fine future as an art critic. I can. Yeah, I don't know. Art is... It's interesting to think about. I think about those things a lot.
And I meant to pick on Christine and I didn't get the chance, but like she did not mention the toilets. So
I was
like we've
afraid to mention the toilets. I was like, what the heck?
So for listeners who haven't been to my house, virtually everything in my house is, like the latest and greatest, like smart technology, including our toilets. So we've got like toilets with built-in bidets and stuff. There's like buttons on the side. When we first had guests, when we first had them put in, like we would explain them, like there was literally like almost like a PowerPoint presentation. This is how it works. But we learned quickly that it was way more fun to not say anything about the toilets and just let people come and stay at the house and see who actually says something and who doesn't and get their reactions. So Christine falls into that camp where she did not say a word, either did her husband. They were here for what, 3, 4 days or something. Seemed like an eternity. I don't know. But yeah, didn't say a word about the toilets. So
No,
yeah, that's
I was like,
wanted to
what are
call you
all
out.
those buttons? And then I just used it old school, like a regular toilet.
So is it like a Japanese toilet or something? Like the,
Oh no, there are
that
like
plays
six
music
buttons
and
with pictures on the side.
They're from Toto, which
I
is
was like,
one of the
I don't
big
know.
toilet manufacturers, not the
Yeah.
band. And they've got these, there's buttons to do all the things, like al along the side there. And what's, like if you travel a lot in a lot of places in Europe, like these are very common, like if you go
Yeah.
outside the US, but like in Western, the Western part of the world, they're just not,
Yeah.
which kind of surprises me. But yeah, we always get
We're
fun
all
reactions
rednecks in
from.
America on some level, I
Yeah,
guess.
I did figure
I
out your
guess so.
sink, which, man, your kitchen sink is a, you just tap it, which was
Yeah.
on
Well,
the
I like
metal. That took me a
those are.
minute, but I got it. I figured that one out.
Yeah, we have something kind of like that for our kitchen sink, and it throws everybody off. That
Yeah.
they move around it for a while, like they're trying to figure it out,
If you just karate chop them, they work. Go.
I find myself tapping other people's sinks and then,
Me too.
not understanding why it's not working. It's sort of
Even
like
before I
I
had that sink, I was doing that though. Just walking around tapping
yeah.
people's sinks.
Well, in public bathrooms, especially here, because the casinos, they're always very good at like high efficiency. And so most of the bathrooms in casinos have that, the motion sensor
Yeah.
underneath it. And so if I go to any other public restroom in Vegas or anywhere really, like I am, oh, it's annual.
The military needs to study me, though, because I am invisible to
They
those
actually
things.
do need to
They need
study.
to study my biology and chemistry,
That was
find out how to
a.
build
Did you
stealth
ever watch
tech.
the show Fargo? In like season 3 or 4, that was the whole lady's like subplot, is that like the sensors for doors and stuff wouldn't see her, and for sinks it was
I
hilarious.
never watched the show. I did watch the movie, but
Show is fantastic.
I'll
I
have
would
to
highly
check it
recommend it.
out. I'll have to
That's one
check
of
it
the
out.
few movies I actually walked out on. I went to see it at the
Fargo?
theater. I was in there for like maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and I'm like, I can't do this, and I
Yeah, but
just
you
left.
didn't like Princess Bride either.
I
So
think we're learning
no, but
that
your taste is questionable.
JD
is
is
opposite
savage. JD hates fun. That's what I learned.
I was upset last week, JD, because I wore my Ender's Game t-shirt for the podcast and you didn't show.
Now I'm listening to the audiobook for Ender's Game and I'm liking it. I
Yeah,
think I'm like
that's.
4 or 5 hours in or something, and it's good. It's extremely imaginative, and if you consider the year that it came out,
Yeah.
the detail
Yeah.
that's involved, like
Yeah.
this guy probably locked himself in a room and just did nothing but plot this for probably 20 years before he put it down on paper.
It's a little prescient too when you look at some of the technology, like the when he's talking about the desks, they're basically tablets.
Yeah.
Each student has one. He doodles on it or whatever, but a lot of that
Oh
technology now exists. Back then, it
yeah.
was pure science fiction.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that got me too, because this was what, 1985 when this came out, I
Something
think.
Yeah, the
like
short
that.
story had come out a few years before that, but yeah, the book was 1985.
Yeah, like nothing has jumped out at me as dated, and listening
Yeah.
to it, like it all seems very, relative to
Yeah.
today, which says a lot.
Doesn't
Yeah.
Ray Bradbury have a story? Ray Bradbury, I don't know how to say his last name. It has like a smartphone that he wrote in like the late 60s, or smart house, like the smart house, and
Yeah, well, I
think it
mean, Fahrenheit
murders
451
someone.
had a smart house with big giant interactive screens
I was
and
thinking of one
people.
specifically. It has a nursery, but it is a smart house that goes
Yeah.
like rogue, and that was well before smart houses were a thing.
We're going to talk about a
Yeah.
smart house today, so.
Did he have flashy toilets with lots of buttons, though? That's the
That
question.
is
Dude,
precisely
how
the question.
dead on
That's how
was
you
he?
know.
All right. Well, speaking of flashy toilets, we should get to the news.
Yes, sir. What is in the news?
I don't know what that has to do with the news, but
Absolutely nothing.
newspapers run fake summer reading list. At least two, well, there's the toilet stuff right there for you. At least two major newspapers recently ran an AI-generated summer reading roundup that featured several books that do not exist. By the way, opportunity for us authors, go write those books. The Philadelphia Inquirer on May 15th and the Chicago Sun-Times on May 18th both published a special insert, Heat Index, Your Best of Summer Guide, which included a list of 15 books and brief descriptions. There are no publication records for nine of the listed books, including names like Andy Weir, Taylor Jenkins Reid, and Percival Everett. Confusingly, a few of the books at the end are real. The list, which did not have a byline, was created by freelance writer Mario Buscagalli, the only writer with a byline in the supplement. Buscagalli said, "I do use AI for background at times, but always check out the materials first. This time, I did not, and I can't believe I missed it because it's so obvious. No excuses on me 100%, and I'm completely embarrassed." Parentheses and fired. Kevin added.
I missed the whole article.
yeah. I don't
They're.
even. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's hard to figure out where to start with this, right? Because I can see this happening. You know, you ask like ChatGPT to create this list for you, and it creates three books that are fake or whatever, and then maybe you spot those and you tell it no, three of those books are fake. Do it again, and then it
Yeah.
creates another one, and now you've got four fake books. And you keep going like if obviously he didn't even check, but to me like the bigger picture here is the bigger picture. Like how much of what we're reading now in the news is generated exactly like this, and some
Yeah.
guy who's getting paid, minimum author wage to put it together isn't even bothering to fact check.
There's a couple of videos floating around on Twitter right now of people who are using the Google Veo, is that what it's called? Veo, I think, that does video, AI video. And they are, one guy generated a fake drug commercial for puppy something that you take this pill and a puppy shows up on your door and it makes you
Oh my
happy.
God.
And but it's got like several little testimonials. It does not read as AI in the least. It's so realistic, dialogue, voice, everything. And so we are just at a scary time is what's happening right
Fact
now.
check everything.
Almost aren't going to be able to believe anything digital anymore. I mean, I'm almost to that point now where, like, I almost don't believe anything I see online. Like, because
No.
you can't.
My
Like,
social media no.
lies to me every day. I was reading one. It's like, oh, this term hangover came from when they used to hang sailors over a line. They showed this picture and I looked it up and it was a lie. It was from a movie. And like, social media lies to me
All right, so
every day.
here's the question though. Where did you look it up? Like, how do you know what you were looking
Snopes.
at
Did you
was
ask
fake? Snopes.
ChatGPT?
Snopes. I.
I'd like to welcome everybody to Kevin's life for the past like 30 years.
Yeah.
Trust no one, trust nothing.
Oh,
Kevin.
now who's wearing the tin? Why do you get to say that and I don't get to say
Madam, I wear tinfoil
trust
underwear.
anyone,
It keeps me
sir?
dry and safe from spying. We should move on. Why everyone is talking about Danny Francis's Silver Elite, the controversy behind BookTok's new dystopian sensation. And they are. This is everywhere right now. A debut novel is going viral on BookTok, and a lack of information about the author has prompted speculation and conspiracy theories from readers. The cover of Silver Elite by Danny Francis doesn't have an author photo, neither does Francis's Instagram page. The absence of details and heavy marketing has driven some BookTok creators to speculate that Danny Francis is actually a pen name for an established author. As other creators have pointed out, authors may use pen names to remain anonymous for safety reasons, preferring to prioritize their privacy while publishing their work. They shouldn't be forced to come forward or be, quote, doxxed by readers. I agree. Do not out me as this person, please.
This could actually be a really clever marketing technique if you think about it. You put the book out, put absolutely zero information on yourself on social media, make it seem like you're not real, and then get a couple people to start talking about it and see if it snowballs. I love that.
I'm going to start replacing any photos or video of me with AI generated and like obviously AI generated. And then people will just assume that I'm faking that my identity. That's what I'm going to do. That's going to rocket me to success.
Yeah. This isn't the first time we've seen this happen, right? Where this kind of thing has gained attention for anonymity. There was someone that did a scavenger hunt on BookTok. Like, who am I? I think Riley Sager started that way too. No picture.
I've looked because I was curious because I actually ordered that book through Book of the Month because they had stenciled edges, and we all know how I feel about those. So, but there's like no evidence that this is a best-selling author. Like the only thing is just that they got stenciled edges and a lot of hype, which debut authors get fancy things like that all the time. So I'm not exactly sure like what sparked this particular
It's probably
controversy.
just the sheer volume of marketing that's happening
I
that's
think
making people
so.
speculate, because
Yeah, the fancy
debut authors
edges
don't
plus the
typically get
marketing.
that.
Still, a lot of people still get, I don't know. It's fine.
I don't know. I went down a Reddit rabbit hole on this and with all the theories about who it was, and then I came out. And I'm just going to leave it there, all the theories.
With no answers, right?
Well, there were speculations, but they're again just
Listen,
speculations,
if
right?
Reddit can't solve it, it's not to be
Oh,
solved.
they had a
That's what
name,
I
but
know.
I don't want to dox. I don't want to dox authors on air. So,
Oh,
see,
you
that's
better
that's
text
the
me.
principal
You better
question here,
text
right?
me. I'm gonna
Like,
text you later.
how do we actually feel about the idea? Like, should I don't think that anybody owes anyone their identity,
I
no matter
agree.
how what their work
No.
is. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Has anybody gone on Publisher's Marketplace and just looked for the original sale of the book to see
Oh,
who,
no,
who
but
the
that's a
agent was?
smart idea.
None of us would think of that, JD. Did you go do it?
No, I don't do homework, so I'm putting it out there for the rest of you guys
I guess we'll have to
to
look
do and then
into
report
that.
back.
Oh, I'm looking right now. Don't you
Well,
worry about that.
let's do this last news story and we need to get on with things. Time magazine profile, Taylor Jenkins Reid sold 5 new books for $8 million. Not $8 as I almost said, $8 million each. Time magazine features Taylor Jenkins Reid on the cover, tracing her rise on book talk in celebrity book clubs and through film and TV adaptations of her work. Most notably, the piece mentions a new 5-book deal, reportedly for $8 million per book. Reid rose to prominence on TikTok in 2021 with her 5th novel, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which was published in 2017. The article discusses the bump authors get from having their work adapted. Daisy Jones and Six was adapted into a TV show, and several more adaptations of her work are in progress. But actually, she says, Reid, you need the movie, the TV show, whatever it is, to come out and be a hit. That's what gets your books back on display and readers back in stores, which shows your publisher they should invest more in you. Reid's agent, Celeste Fine, has noticed that publishers now seem to expect, quote, not only exceptional books, but also marketing and sales acumen, engagement on social media, and the ability to entertain a crowd on a tour, unquote.
I'm doomed with that
And to
last
that, I
one.
say, challenge accepted.
Okay. Entertain a crowd.
I can
The
entertain a
list of
crowd.
things we have to do is getting longer and longer and longer, isn't
You
it?
got to be a carnival act now. You can't just write your books and write a good book or any of that nonsense. You got to be able to juggle and juggle
I feel
puppies
like
at
you
that.
probably did that in a former career, Kevin.
I
Like,
have some background in a
see?
sort of
Yeah.
vaudeville type scenario.
So what are you complaining about?
Yeah. I do I think this is true. And I also think that there's a sort of caution here, by the way, which is, she says, it has to you need the movie and TV show to come out and be a hit, she said. And the opposite is also a danger. You look at some of the films and shows that were, adaptations of books. Like Bonfire of the Vanities was like a mega bestseller for like a decade or something, and that film came out and now it's radioactive. No one will even touch it. And the same with Jumper. Jumper was an amazing book. I was so excited that that film was coming out, and the film just trashed the entire story, trashed the book. I'd argue that even the Ender's Game film kind of ruined the book a little. That hurts to
You
say.
never know, though. Like, even when those things are in production, when you're going through that process, until you actually see it on the screen, you've got no idea, you know, how people are going to react to it. And even then, you know, like once you get it done and get it in the can, it's no different than a book. Then you need discoverability. So then you need a platform, you know, like what if it comes, you know, it comes out on Hulu instead of on HBO, you know, like all these things change, you know, how, you know, who actually sees it. And then, you know, it could vanish. It's crazy. Daisy Jones was good though. I watched the series, liked the series enough to go back and read the book.
I've never
You
heard
know,
of
so
it. I'm
it
gonna
did what
have to
it
go
was
check it
supposed to.
out. Oh,
The book was good. I actually have that on my list to watch, whenever I have free time. But I was curious. So it's good to know that you liked it. We'll find out if Opposite Day continues.
It was 1,000 times better than Princess Bride.
Okay.
Come
All right.
on.
Well, on that note, that
Inconceivable.
was all the news through which you cannot snooze. So let's jump right into things. Hey, this is Kevin Tomlinson. It seems to me like you might need a little help. Maybe hand off all that stuff that's keeping you from writing. At Author Anchor, we connect authors with skilled, affordable virtual assistants trained specifically for the publishing world. Your personal VA handles everything from book production to marketing and social media, freeing you up to focus on what matters most, your writing. Book a discovery call today and we'll find that perfect VA for you. Plus, mention the Writers Inc. podcast and you'll get $50 off your first month. Visit authoranchor.com and get matched with your personal VA so you can just write.
All right, JD, who's up this week?
This week, we've got Heather Graham back on. Heather's the New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of more than 100 novels. Her latest is called The Murder Machine and released in April. Here she is, Heather Graham.
Okay, Heather Graham, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here to see you.
Yeah, you have a new book out, The Murder Machine, which we're going to talk a little bit about. But as I was just saying before we got on air, the last time you were with us was just when we were getting started about 5 years ago in 2020. And I went back and listened to that interview. And as you know, we're geared towards writers. We did not talk about your writer origin story last time. How did you get started in this crazy business? I would love to hear about it.
Well, I was one of the kids who always had a book. And I have actually, I mean, I really owe a lot to my folks. They were both big readers, spent a lot of time in libraries. When I went to school, however, I actually majored in theater arts, got out of college, and I think one of my favorite was I worked at the Oslo State Theater here in Florida, and with the Gallaudet School for the Deaf, which was very interesting, and did a lot of dinner theater down here. And one of the fun things about being a theater major back at USF then, they used to take us to Underground Disney all the time.
Ooh.
And we got to be Fluffies and do things like that. So that was really cool. But by the time I had, and you know, I was one of those people who was really career oriented. Like at first, I was not going to marry till I was at least 30. Yeah, I wouldn't have my children until a couple years later. Wound up getting married at 18. My husband and I went to college together. And then, by the time we had three children, it was more expensive for me to go to work than it was to stay home. So that's when I got that typical, your nose is always in a book. Why don't you try to write one? So, and at that time, I bought Writer's Digest, Writer's Market, and started looking up things. And I really wasn't, I'd always read everything. So I wasn't thinking genre at all. And Writer's Digest, Writer's Market gave me a lot, I think. And one of the first things I sold was a short horror story to a magazine called Twilight Zone in Canada. I don't think it exists anymore, but honestly, I don't think it was my fault. But then the big thing, I was writing a lot of historicals because my parents had great books from Scotland and Ireland, and they were immigrants, so they had all kinds of great history. And then once I got married, my husband's family were also mainly immigrants from Italy, and they all lived in Massachusetts. So we would go from Florida to Massachusetts all the time, visit museums, battle sites, all this kind of thing. And I just loved history. To this day, I do. So anyway, I was writing category romance and historical novels at the same time. When I sold the category, they didn't really want to see the historical, but A friend who owned a magazine company at the time came down with her magazine with an ad that said Liza Dawson at Pinnacle is looking for historicals written with a book with a voice similar to Heather Graham's. And I'm like, oh, let me try, let me try. So, but at that time, they were very proprietorial about names. And so she told me I had 60 seconds to come up with a pseudonym. Shane and Derek walked into the room. So that became Shannon Drake. And I did historicals under Shannon Drake. And then for some reason, after that, I wound up doing vampires as Shannon Drake. So I don't know. But I mean, it's, I'm very, very grateful. Some people say that, oh, it's much better if you just stick with something from the get-go and get branded. And I'm sure that there's value in that. But since I read everything, I'm really grateful that I've gotten to do as much as I've gotten to do.
Well, you are, I think it's fair to say you're prolific. How do you even know how many books you've had published yet? It must be in the hundreds.
It is in the hundred. I'm
200?
not sure what the exact number is.
So yeah, I think that's fair to say. You've written everything, including Christmas. Christmas, which I love. Do you feel like, because I was like, you know what? I was thinking about that. Christmas stories, holiday stories do really, really well.
I love Christmas. So it's a good thing to write about. One thing I noticed though too is I think one of the Christmas books I have out from years ago is called Spirit of the Season, and it's about Little League because my kids were in Little League then. So the things we do in life I think go along with us, in our minds and our imagination. And I probably knew from an early age that I would want to do mysteries because when I was a kid, there was a big thing in the news about a bunch of the bodies found in barrels in the Everglades. So that was kind of a creepy thing.
Have you ever done an underground Disney story? Did that ever creep its way into your
You
books?
could. You never know.
You
Yeah.
never know. Okay, so and you were writing, then you were at home with three children when you started.
Then I had two more.
My goodness. And you write at least three books a year, maybe four. Were you doing that at the same time while you had small children as well?
Well, I think that was one of the things about, like I said, one of the first things I sold was category. And there was a demand. If you could get them in, they put out like eight a month or something like that. So if you could get things in that they liked, it allowed you to support a family that big. But I think also I just love what I do. I'm very, very lucky in that. Absolutely love it. And I think the only major problem with time is that, well, I'm sure you know this, you have a tendency to go down the rabbit hole where, you're looking something up and then you find out that you've watched five documentaries and your day's almost shot. So, or, like you spend the next morning waiting for Amazon to get there with a research book you've ordered. So we all do
Exactly.
that.
And then you've spent hours on something that's two lines in your book. I've researched some strange things, including bird mating and all sorts of weird things. Have
I
you,
have not done that
it's very strange. Has there been
one
anything
yet.
that struck you in your research as just being like, wow, that's something you just had to
Well,
get
I
down.
just found out I do a letter every or as many holidays as I can that always contain a free story for readers. And this year I was doing Memorial Day and it was kind of, I just started thinking about my own family. And then with mine, like I said, both my parents were immigrants. I really don't have that many, in the background to go looking into. But my husband's dad was one of 11, and his mom was one of six, and they were Italian. And I had never known this when I started looking it up, that Italian Americans and German Americans during World War II were considered enemy aliens. And now, but it was still okay for them to join the service. And he had two uncles who were killed over there, and then three or four who managed to come back. So that kind of made me sad, think about the, things that had happened. And then but I mean, it's when I sent it out, I heard from a lady who, it had meant a lot to her because she lost a relative in Afghanistan. I mean, it's very, very sadly We forget sometimes it's the Memorial Day weekend. You know, you can go away, you can do all kinds of things. And it's just, I think it's important for us to remember, you know, the people that, you know, have gone out and, you know, sacrificed all for our country.
Yeah, that's lovely. And I love that you do a newsletter and send out those free stories.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah,
We always
that's
hope we're doing something
a
right.
lovely gift for readers. It really is.
Hope so. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk about your new book, The Murder Machine. Hopefully you remember which one it is with all the books you write. So it's a classic murder mystery involving a smart house. So what in if you have a smart house, what in your house is most likely to kill you? I'd love to
I'm
hear
afraid
about
my
that one.
house isn't that smart, but no, that one was kind of inspired. I was over at a friend of mine house the Christmas before I did it, and her house did everything. It turned on the lights,
Yeah.
it sang Christmas. It did like everything in the world. And I forget what it was, but some little thing went wrong. And you know, it was kind of like, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, a computer can glitch.
Yeah.
But more than that, computers can also, one of the things that happens in the book came straight out of the news. Obviously, names and places and everything were changed. But to me, it was a little bit scary because at the time, there were several ads out. You know, somebody had been to a sporting event. They parked. Oh my God, where did they leave their car? Oh, easy to find. They'll pull out their phone and their phone will tell them where the car is. Not only that, it can start the car and bring the car to you. Well, if your computer can do that, a hacker can also do it.
Yeah.
So all kinds of things can if happen if you, it's frightening how people can learn to hack into things. I mean, we've all seen it with banks, credit cards, all this kind of thing, you know, but mostly, you know, hopefully mostly not lethal.
No.
So it can.
No, and yeah, I think about that. My worry is always if my GPS goes down, I won't be able to drive anymore. I've forgotten how to read a map. Remember, we used to fold them out. You had to pull over, figure out where you're going.
Triptychs, AAA,
Yeah,
triptychs.
triptychs. You get to get the triptychs. Flip and flip. And yeah, see, I don't know. If the satellites go down, hopefully those skills will come back. But yeah, I don't have anything smart in my house because that stuff, other than my phone, I guess, my phone and my computer, which are probably listening to me right now. But besides that, all the rest of that stuff, I don't like it. I don't. Yeah, so this book kind of hit for me. I'm like, yes, this is why I don't have any smart stuff in my house.
Yeah, well, you know, our house is kind of, I'm actually at my daughter's right now, but our house is from, which is old in Miami. It's from 1935.
Yeah.
So we're lucky when the lights work, you know, because so many things need to be revamped after that much time. Well, actually, the electric has been revamped, but you know, things that have been around. So yeah, it's not very smart at all. So same, have the phone, have the computer. And oh my God, it's kind of like I remember when they were laughing about the remote control the other day, and somebody was saying, remember when you used to be the remote control? Yeah,
Yes,
some
get up and
people
change
their things
the
channel. Yeah.
channel. Especially if you're a kid, your dad would be like, get up, go change the TV. So, not having a smart house, did that make that kind of difficult to write? Did you do a lot of research or did you just mostly rely on imagination?
I did research, and then, like I said, I had a friend who's have a friend who's everything is you know, all you do is, you know, talk to your friend and everything happens. So
Yeah.
mainly, well, I guess I shouldn't say everything happens at her house, but you know, it was funny for Christmas because you just walk in the front door and, you know, oh, turn on the Christmas lights. Oh, let's have some music. Oh, no, turn off the TV first. You know, it's like you're talking to a real person who's running around doing all these things. So it's a little bit creaky.
Yeah.
Oh, turn on the coffee pot while you're at it, which was good. I really wanted some coffee. So, you
So it worked
know.
out. Was there anything in your research you found that just was like really scary to you about how these smart devices work?
The fact that so many things can be hacked, I find to be very frightening. Even especially with newer cars, and various things like that. Anything that is mechanical, that is now mechanically computerized and run by a computer. Because one thing, right after I had turned that book in, I went to I had judged the Edgars, and so I went to the Marriott in Times Square in New York City, and it has the glass elevators and
Oh,
that go
yeah.
up about 62 floors. And I remember thinking, why did I do that when I was coming here? Because
Yeah.
every time I was in that elevator, I couldn't wait to get off of it. So
Yeah.
it's,
And some of them go pretty fast too, and it's
oh
just,
yeah.
yeah.
And it's just like, for me, it's like, I don't need to see it. I don't need to see it.
Exactly. So one thing that I think is interesting is that we're now seeing more stories about tech gone wrong or people using tech for nefarious purposes. I'm curious, you've been doing this a while. I think probably, the AI stories are now, so in a couple of years we'll probably see something different than that in smart appliances. What do you think is coming for us next?
Wow. I think, like everything else, AI will evolve and we'll get to see what's coming out with that. And then I also think sometimes when we get into situations like this, historical novels start to become,
Yeah.
More of a thing where you're going to go back and look at World War II, where, we're going to look at different things that happened throughout history or even farther back. which is funny because right now romanticies have become very big.
Yes, they have.
And during the pandemic, I happened to see a documentary on the period when the Romans left Britain. And it was a fabulous documentary. And then I figured, oh my God, I got to do something with that. And then I thought, oh, I'll put Merlin's daughter in it. I had never heard the word romanticy. So I had absolutely no idea that apparently I was writing one. But at the time, it was kind of like, no, you got to do mystery, mystery, mystery.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I'll put the Shannon Drake name on it and put it up myself, which I did. And then 3 years later, I have a contract with the
Oh,
romanticity on
I love that. I think, it's really smart, especially now with AI being able to write to diversify, do different things, do different genres. I really do think it is cyclical, like you said. We're going to get our fill of the kind of high tech stories and then probably go back to some of the more historical
And
stories.
then you never know. I mean, that's the thing,
Never
one
know.
thing that I always tell people who are just starting to write. If you love something and it's in you and you've got to get it on paper, but you don't think it's trendy, if you love it, you should still do it because you never know when a trend is going to change. And then also, if you're really determined that you're writing for a living, for an income, you have to look at what they're, take a look at what everybody's buying at the moment.
Yeah.
So, but then again, with most of the larger houses, you're going to write something and it's going to be 9 months to a year and a half before it's out. So who knows what the trend will be then?
Yeah, exactly. And is there anything that's lighting you up that you're kind of excited about writing? I know, how do you keep finding new ideas and new stories that just keep you engaged and wanting to write them?
Well, at the moment, like I, it's our lives. Our lives are always, what come into being. And I said my mom immigrated from Dublin, and I had a great grandmother who would often watch my sister and I, and she was so much fun because she was an incredible storyteller, but she also liked to tell us both, if you don't be behaving, the banshees be getting you in the outhouse. And we were teenagers before we realized we didn't even have an outhouse, so no banshees were getting us there. But she told good stories. So when this came back up, I decided that I was going to look into a lot of the old legends that she had given me and mix them in with some magic. So I've been having fun looking up Irish history, which is a little bit frightening because, of course, we all know about the Norse invasions of the time. But it was just frightening to see there were, I think, I'm trying to remember the exact number now, The population of Ireland was approximately, I think it was 500,000, and there were 150 reis or what or kings.
Wow.
And then, the different divisions often had difficulty with each other. One king would want to get something the other king had, so they were kind of already messing around. But it's been a lot of fun because I'm doing a lot of research on Brian Boru and the whole thing, which is really weird too, because like Saint Patrick came and they started their trip towards Christianity, but they had the weirdest marriage laws I've ever heard. Brian Boru wound up with several wives. So
At the
and
same time.
yeah. And then he wound up being stepfather to a guy named Sigurd Silkbeard, with whom he wound up having the massive battle that culminated at Clontarf. So it's like reading the history. It's like, huh? And worse than that,
Yeah.
the language. Oh my God, is it hard to read? the names, and they're very basically the Celts at the time created the language, so it's interesting.
Yeah, that I wouldn't think too, like trying to read some of that. Like I remember reading Robert Burns, like you'd have to say it out loud or I didn't really know what was on the page. Read it out loud, so
People had
yeah.
names that went on forever. Yeah. But it was fun too, because one of the, like down the rabbit hole, one of the things I wound up watching is they found out a group of researchers and went into the major colleges, and they found out that they believe the first peoples there actually spread out from the area that's now Turkey, and they spread into Europe and then over to Britain and then over to Ireland. So, and then you got the influx of the Germanic, what is now Germany and in France, and that area started moving on up. So looking back, it's kind of like things we think we know, we don't. So.
Yeah. No, it is interesting because my father is Scottish, and when I went there, I went to the library to look up the lineage of like before the 9th century, and they actually came from Hungary. So I'm like, yeah, you came here from Hungary, 9th century, which.
We have been moving forever. Well, I like to tease my eldest son, which of course was funny because I happened to be, I think I was, I think Romantic Times was big back then, and Catherine had a trip over to Scotland, and they were getting ready to open one of their museums, and they were selling bricks, which many people do. You know what I mean? That helps you get it. So I bought one for all of my children. And then my son and daughter-in-law went on their honeymoon, and they went to the museum, and he went to ask one of the guides, if he could help him find him. And the guy just looked at him and said, "What kind of a name is Port? So he did get to explain his name was Jason Graham, because that's right.
Yeah, I like that saying that, it's like, yeah, that's good. Try some Gaelic names then. They're not easy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I used to get, because his family was from Stirling, and personally, I think that one was a little more difficult even than the Irish. But I would be asked when I was a kid, if I were out with them, I'd be asked if I could interpret for people if they were asking for something. But I also he had quite a sense of humor, because when I was going over, and I think it was that time, I asked him, "Give me some addresses of people I can look up. We're going to be going to Stirling." And he gave me an address, and I got there, and it was the Stirling Cemetery.
Oh my goodness. Oh,
Thanks
that's
a lot,
fun.
Dad. Thanks a lot.
Well, I love that. I love that you're kind of going back to doing historical and romanticy and, things that you kind of maybe started in your career. And it's great that you can diversify. So you can just do whatever you want with trade or put things out on your own name.
Well, like I said, I did, because I had done that, and it was just kind of like, I think this is decent. I'm going to put it up,
Yeah.
Well, as far as a lot of things, it's funny because a lot of people talk about Amazon, and then some people, "Oh, no, you need a mainstream publisher," and things like that. I think it's fine if you publish on Amazon if you remember the word publish.
Yes.
When you're going to do it, you need to make sure that you've edited it, that you've, really given it your best, because you'll want people to come back again. So we
Absolutely.
always need to try. And that's why I love editors. Although I'm very lucky, because I have a friend who is an English teacher for 20 something years, and she will read my my manuscripts and try to find the words I've left out and the other things. Because I don't know if you've ever, When you go back over your own work, sometimes you see what's in your mind
Yes,
and
not
not
what's
what's
on the
on the
page.
page.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the typos, like I can read the same page 10 times and I won't see it. So, yeah.
I love editors. I think they're very necessary human beings.
They are the best. Yeah. So as we're going in the process now, writing, editing, there was an article that came out in Time last week that's saying that authors are being asked to do more. We need to be doing social media. We need to be entertaining crowds on stages. I'm just curious, are you getting asked to do more? Are there things now you have to do that maybe you didn't do when you started out?
Definitely when I started out, you didn't worry so much about promotion. There was a lot more done. And of course, it's one thing that I've noticed big time with my children. And I have the little one that I'm with now is a 7-year-old, and videos. Oh my God, they are so into videos. So it's a visual world, and they definitely want you to have much more social media going on,
Yeah.
which is it's funny. I'm trying to relearn a lot of things because when social media came out, I'm like I loved. Cute animal pictures. I loved my family getting to see my family, getting to see my friends, even neat things that were happening to strangers. But then I always remember somebody writing something like, morning, cappuccino or latte. And I just felt like, I don't care. So at first, it's kind of like I really, unless I had something, I really didn't want to, put things down. And now I'm learning if you don't have something, come up with
Come
it.
up with it.
You're
And
supposed to be
so, is
out there.
that stuff you have to do on your own, or do you get videos done from your publishers, or a bit of both?
Pretty much so. I mean, they're doing things, I'm sure, but as far as the social media goes, mainly you need to move on things.
Yeah.
And then I think it's really interesting because this year. Well, for one of the things I enjoy more than anything else, I honestly think that fiction writers are some of the nicest people you're ever going to meet. And yes, obviously, you're going to have a few bad eggs and anything, but it's the most supportive, like wonderful group of people. And I belong to horror writers, thriller writers, mystery writers, romance writers. I'm missing something. I got to do my first world fantasy last year.
Nice.
I don't know. Like I said, I love our groups and I love the people in it. And I think the groups are incredibly helpful and supportive. And there's something called VoucherCon, which is the World Mystery Convention. And I'm the location chair for it in New Orleans this year.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and this is the first time because VoucherCon, of course, has a board and the things that the board does, and they have actually, a really good friend of mine, Connie Perry, who does a lot of the hotel negotiations and the setup with people and everything. And this year, it's the first time we have a couple of young influencers on board
Oh.
to start doing more of the promotion on it. And not only that, I think it's great because VoucherCon a couple of years ago celebrated its, I think it was 50th anniversary several years ago. And so a lot of our members have been around. And because it is such a supportive convention for mysteries, you want to get the young crowd into it.
Yeah.
So I think it's great that we have them, and I'm very impressed. And I'm hoping that they give me some lessons on things I don't understand yet.
Yeah. That's a good idea too, because they can kind of help you find your social media, like what's my personality, what's my brand? You can ask people and they can give you ideas. And I'm jealous. I've always wanted to get to VoucherCon. I love New Orleans. So
Oh,
one
why aren't
time.
you coming?
I don't know. It's just like I try and fit stuff in sometimes. One year I will come. I'll show up one year.
Well, we're looking at, I was surprised. We're a friend of mine who's run our local group, Sleuth Fest. She's ran many of our conventions. She wants to do a VoucherCon here in Miami. And when they came down to do some of the site inspections, I got to go, and I'm kind of like, ooh, I really would love to do one at the Fountain Blue. That would be nice.
Yes.
So
Oh.
maybe by then, because they're always several years ahead. You know what you're doing several years ahead, because of course you have to have contracts with hotels and all
Yeah.
kinds of things like that. So
Yeah. conferences are a tremendous amount of work, and the people that put them together and get all those logistics in place, like, I'm in awe. They have my respect.
I'm in awe. I didn't actually get kicked out of one, but we did. I don't know what it is. I'm from Miami, but when I was a little kid, I went to New Orleans with my dad, and I just fell in love with the zoo, and the whole look of it. Everything was fascinating, and he was great about taking me to all kinds of museums. So I'd been back my whole life, and Connie Perry lives in Lafayette, Louisiana, so we would always meet in New Orleans. And we were there together one time right after Katrina. And a friend of mine owned a carriage company at the time, and she told me that she felt that they'd been hurt by federal, state, city, parish, and but the American people were wonderful and incredible. The only thing is they didn't want to keep living on charity, so I should have a conference. And I was like, and I looked at Connie, but we did small, like a couple hundred people at cost,
Yeah.
just to get people to come. And it was a lot of fun. But when we would be talking to the hotel, Connie would always tell me, just stay quiet. Just stay quiet. So I did.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that's fun. Yeah, I would be quiet too because you don't need my help with logistics.
Well, there's just so many things because it's kind of like somebody could say something about a meal and I could say, that's terrific. But she would say, yes, that would be wonderful, but we're going to need the room in front. You know what I mean? She would
Yeah.
know what you need to get with everything. And she's very, very good at it.
Yeah,
So.
that's great. Well, it's wonderful. Things are moving and shaking, and you're so being prolific and getting all those books out of there. So I'd just like to ask you, just as we're coming to a close, looking back, has there been one piece of advice, good or bad, that you would give to new writers or to your past self about this business?
I would just say mine is always be smart, but believe in yourself too. And then once you've done that and you have your project, make sure it's your best. And then look at all of your options. And then again, join these groups. Like I said, we are the mo a friend of mine asked me one time, not some we were at something. It's like, I don't understand it. All of you authors, why are you trying to train all of your competition? And it's kind of like, well, for one, I can't write 60 books a month, you know. And then for the other, if somebody else wasn't writing, what the hell would I read? You know?
Yeah.
But I think most of us spend most of our lives still being readers. So it's I don't know. Like I said, it's a wonderful field where everybody's incredibly supportive. I remember getting to meet R.L. Stein, Bob Stein, for the first time, and I was always in love with Bob Stein. He's the nicest man possible, you know. So it's really great. Connect with some kind of group. Even and nowadays you can do a lot of connecting on videos, so it's not even always that hard.
That's great advice. Community is the best. Okay, so Heather has done some major genre hopping, which I find fascinating. She even did a Christmas story. What holiday story would you do? Would you ever do one? Halloween doesn't count. That's a cop out.
Nightmare Before Christmas count?
I have a Christmas Dan Kotler thriller called The Bones of Saint Nicholas that I did for a Christmas anthology originally, but now it's a standalone sitting out there.
Interesting. Potential. I think it would have to be like the right story. It's kind of hard to come up with something that's not like, I don't know, already been done. I do like The Bones of Saint Nicholas, though. That's a clever title. I like it.
Well, there
Nice job,
there's a
Kevin.
reason. There's a reason musicians all put out Christmas albums. You know, like that stuff gets
Oh, yeah.
toted back out once a year. And I see it with Dracul. You know, like every Halloween, that book is back in the front windows of
Yeah.
bookstores, you know, year after year after year. So that's got me thinking, you know, you need to capture another holiday, but you got to go for one
Yeah.
of the more obscure ones, you know, like Saint Patty's Day
No,
or something.
you gotta write a very Dracul Christmas.
Yeah.
Very Dracul Christmas.
Well, that I
Yeah.
was thinking about Joe Hill's book, Nosferatu, is a Christmas book.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
that's
Yeah,
true. Yeah.
it you see it a lot with cozy mysteries. Cozy mysteries are very good at like highlighting all the holidays. Like if there is a holiday, it doesn't matter how obscure it is, there's like a slew of cozy mysteries that cover it, which is pretty impressive considering
Yeah, Dan Kotler, the Yom Kippur connection. That
I
one's
mean,
coming
there's so
up.
many good ones though you could do.
Yeah.
Like you could do a Bloody
Valentine's
Valentine's
Day,
Day.
St. Patrick's
Independence Day
Day.
gets brought out every year. Like you
That's
can do
true.
it.
They
I
trot
believe
that
in
one
you.
out.
You've got to pick a holiday nobody's done yet, you know. So you need Labor Day or Groundhog Day. Well,
the Arbor
Groundhog Day
Day
is done
murderers.
too.
I'm telling you, the cozy mysteries have done all of them. They have done all of them.
I'd be curious to find a list, you know, like of the top. I'm sure Christmas is first, Halloween is probably
Yeah.
second. But what comes next? Is it?
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's
Oh
Day.
yeah,
Fourth of
okay.
July.
Fourth of
July.
St. Patrick's Day has been. I write a lot of these lists, so I'm very familiar with all the cozy
Jenna's put
mysteries and the
thought.
holidays. So
I'm just sitting here thinking
every.
of titles. The Lent Codex. That's going to be a good
Yeah,
one.
every holiday, my editor is like, go find some cozy mysteries about this. And I'm like, okay. And shockingly, there is always an abundant amount. That's why it is impressive.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah,
At
that's
least you're not
awesome.
using AI to create your list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like to create lists with actual books on them that people wrote and that they can go purchase in real
How
life.
dare you?
What a concept. All right. So Heather's latest book is about an AI-controlled smart home. I feel like this was made for JD.
Oh, JD.
And it
Yeah.
kills its owner. What in your house is most likely to kill you? I want to know.
That toilet sounds like it's most likely to get it.
Well,
The snow blower.
ooh, maybe the snow blower. I actually just gave one to the local elementary school because they sent me the latest model. So I had two robot snow blowers, and nobody needs two robot snow blowers.
No,
So,
obviously.
like, but I had to preface, like, I had to show the principal of the school, like, this thing is actually dangerous because it's got, you know, blades that spin.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a good teaching tool for robotics. So I figured that, you know, their robotics class would benefit from it. In my house, Christine didn't get to see Astro in operation. We powered him down before she came. But I think he would probably be the start of it. Only because he's mobile, he's probably the only scary thing we've got in the house. Everything with, you know, automated lights and stuff like that, you know, not quite as scary. But you could probably, I bet you could do something with HVAC, you know, if you
Yeah.
really put some thought behind it. I've got a whole system that runs beneath the house in the crawl space that puts out ozone, which is poisonous. And it only obviously runs when we're not home, but it's a great way to keep the critters and other things from getting in your house without having to
Oh,
use light spray and stuff.
fascinating.
Yeah, we discovered that year without going. I don't want to go off on a whole thing here, but when we used to flip houses, like if people smoked in the house or if there was something organic that, you know, went bad in the house, ozone will get rid of all of that.
Wow.
But it's also poisonous
Yeah.
because it chokes
Yeah.
off oxygen. And I have yet to kill somebody with ozone in a book, but it's on my list because I've got a feeling in an autopsy I don't think they'd see it.
That's
Yeah.
very interesting.
I'm gonna duct tape a machete to a Roomba. I think that's
That's
the
all right.
next serial killer.
My house is so Luddite. The most likely thing to kill me in my house is my cat. She is gonna trip me when I'm
Oh,
going down the
yes, that's
stairs.
100%.
That's how I'm
Yep.
gonna die.
Yeah.
And then she's gonna eat you, which
She will
is,
eat me.
Well, your eyeballs first.
yeah, that's
Just
how all those stories end.
yeah, in case you wanted to know that. What is likely to kill me in my house?
Do you have smart tech?
Not a lot, no. I'm not a fan of it because if it breaks down, it's more expensive to repair it than it is buy something new, and I hate that.
Yeah, I'm opposed to that too.
So I tend not to have like if it the more options it has to break, the less likely I am to purchase
It's
it.
getting tougher to buy appliances that are
It is.
not smart appliances, and that's irritating, you know. And I
Yeah.
watched a whole thing about this guy who bought a new dishwasher. His dishwasher broke down. He went and bought the, you know, the best one he could find for under $1,000. And he got it in and plugged in. You can't use half the features a dishwasher is used for without signing up for a paid subscription on the manufacturer's website. So, like running a rinse cycle, you have to be a subscriber.
Well, have you seen that they're doing that in cars too? I think it was
Oh,
in
yeah.
BMW.
Yeah.
Like, if you want heated seats, you have to pay a subscription for it,
Oh, I
which
think
is
BMW actually had one where if you
ludicrous.
want to use the radio, you have to have a subscription. Like,
That
you
is
can't
like the most
even.
outrageous thing. I would
Yeah.
rather buy a used 1990 Bronco at this point
Same.
than like ever pay them a
But that was
penny.
true of me anyway. I would rather have the 1990 Bronco.
Well, yeah.
You
I
know what
mean,
else is like that? gym equipment.
Oh,
We
yeah.
we've got a gym here at the house, and like when I had to buy a treadmill and all those other things, almost
Ah.
all of them are connected now. And if you don't subscribe, like you get these nag screens when you first turn it on, and like you have
God,
to click
it's
through and cancel,
so
and like
annoying.
they try to nag you into getting the subscription because it's easier to do that than it is to deal with the, not having the subscription and all the things that
There's
they throw in front of
got to
you.
be a way to hack that. There has to be. There has to
Listeners,
be
let us
a
know.
jailbreak out there for that.
Yeah,
How to
yeah.
jailbreak our gym equipment.
Right. Yep.
So JD's like being listening to this Luddite conversation. Have you got your flying car yet? That is what I want to know.
I haven't got my flying car, and I haven't gotten an update on the flying car for at least 6 months from these people. And now you got me thinking about the flying car, so I got to figure out what's going on with that. Because like I did put a deposit on it, and it's not something I expect to be in my driveway anytime soon. But the least they could do is be like a Kickstarter and send you a little update once a
Yeah.
month, kind of let you know what's going on. But they vanished, so I've got a feeling they took the flying car money and they're in Barbados or something.
Yeah, I've had something like that happen to me. So yeah, I don't trust these things. I buy. I don't invest in new product. I want to give you my money and then you give me the product. I'm not supporting it. I'm not backing campaigns anymore. I've been ripped off too many times.
Yeah.
I
I don't know.
bought this fancy tinfoil
I still like to
underwear
support
on one of those
startups,
things.
but all right. I guess with that, JD, who is up next week?
Next week, we've got Hazel McBride coming on. Hazel grew up in Scotland and obtained a degree in psychology from the University of Glasgow. She's currently living in the Netherlands, and her latest novel is called A Faith Forged in Fire and releases May 27th. Hazel McBride.
It's going to be great. If you'd like to be notified as soon as new episodes publish, make sure you go to writersincpodcast.com and sign up now. We'll see you next episode and have a great week of writing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Writers Inc. Access the show notes and leave a comment at writersincpodcast.com.